Hey, everybody. Welcome to The Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today, I sit down with Alex Wolff. The 22-year-old actor has come a long way since his days as a child star with his brother Nate on Nickelodeon's The Naked Brothers Band. His credits are too long to name here, but later this month, he'll be seen in Human Capital, an indie thriller starring Liev Schreiber, Marissa Tomei, and Maya Hawke. This comes on the heels of The Cat in the Moon, a coming-of-age film that Wolff wrote, directed, and starred in. In other words, we had a lot to talk about. So coming up after the break, Wolff reveals how Noah Baumbach played a key role in shaping The Cat in the Moon, how playing Hawke's love interest brought back memories of preschool, and what happened when he lost 30 pounds in just 2 weeks to play a drug addict in the upcoming Castle in the Ground. I'll be right back with Alex Wolff. Welcome back. Here's Alex Wolff.
How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're a busy man. Very busy man.
Yeah, so are you.
I am. But
very busy.
You're just like, what do we say? Human Capital, Castle on the Ground, Bad Education, of course your movie The Cat in the Moon. So where should we start? Let's talk Cat in the Moon. It's really great.
Thanks, man.
It's really great coming of age story. Reminded me of growing up in New York. You know, let's go to that party, blah, blah. And then, yeah, it would turn into a mess. But my big question for you is, because when I first started reading about it, before I saw it, I started reading about it, and some stories are saying it's based on your experiences growing up in New York. But then I'm like, well, it's not really your story for sure. Your dad is your dad, your mom is your mom. They are not those characters.
Yeah,
I'm not going to give too much away. So where did this story come from? How did it, I know I've read, I think you were talking about, like, you started writing when you were 15?
Yeah,
wow.
I started writing when I was 15. Well, I mean, it started because I really didn't want to do my schoolwork in freshman year of high school, and I didn't want to study for my finals, and so my, like, rebellion, I just started kind of writing the script.
I'm going to rebel, I'm writing a script.
Exactly, the lamest way to rebel in the world. But for me, it is very much my sensibility, and it's such a lame word, but spiritually, it's like very much my story. It's very much like from my heart, and almost embarrassing for me to watch because it's so honest of my feelings. But the actual lead character was, there's parts of me in it, definitely some parts I'm maybe want to be, you know, maybe I want to be tougher with a shaved head and all those things,
but then tattooed knuckles.
Tattooed knuckles and all those, but then also things I'm very embarrassed of that I am. And I guess it was sort of, I could actually find parts of myself I didn't know existed through another person, but it was also a culmination of other people that I went to school with. And, and also jazz is such a huge part of my life, and my dad's a jazz musician, and I think my dad connects to other musicians being jealous of him, like the Cal character is based on a bunch of different people, and I think that's just something that happens. So it's definitely from me, but the lead character is in a lot of ways very different.
But what did your parents think when they read the script? Dad is...
They sent me to therapy immediately. They put me in therapy. They put me in a straitjacket. I think my parents are such movie fans that I remember my mom reading the script and going immediately into ideas on how to make the script better. You know, like, if you could tighten up on pages 70 to 90, whatever. Didn't really think about drug addict mother and all those things. She didn't even for a second bat an eye. And then I think my dad was always focused on the music elements but I think it hit them. They said it really hit them. They came to set. I was very saying, oh, you should come to set, but they were very respectful about not intruding on what we were doing and letting me really, have this. And then I might get nervous with my parents there.
Right.
But with the rooftop big party scene, they showed up and there were all the trucks and stuff making a movie. And I remember my parents got very emotional and
were
both kind of like, wow, you know.
You're really doing it.
Actually making a movie. It's not just. So I think that was cool.
So were you a big partier in high school?
I played the fifth. We move on. We're gonna move on the podcast. No, I mean I was like, I had fun, but I wasn't like a big drinker or right. anything like that. I just, I was pretty wild. I just was a little bit wild, but, and I couldn't really follow rules, so mm-hmm. to speak. But at the same time, I think I was okay. I think I was fine. I got out alive.
Because those scenes, I mean, there's a fight scene that is just.
Yeah.
And he is an angry boy. He's a really angry boy.
Yeah.
And it was, I looked away. At one point, I really had to look away because I was like, okay, they're going to show the guy that he just hit. And what is his face going to look like?
Yeah.
Is that based on anything real?
It's based on maybe situations that could have gotten to that point.
Right.
But didn't get there. And I think the movie is a little bit of a hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like real life hyperbole. Like,
right.
it's like I've had situations that were really scary and dangerous like that in New York. That was happening either with me or with other people where it just gets really heated. And especially if there's, you know,
alcohol
and just tempers rising and a bunch of hormones and whatever, things like that happen. It never got pushed to that point ever. Especially not with me, but I watch situations like that get pretty scary. And
how many of your friends then go see the movie going, is that based on me? Is that based on me? Is that based on me? Oh, who's that? Oh, I remember that story. Yeah, that's based on me.
I think unfortunately a lot of people see a lot of themselves and a lot of these characters. And that was the tough thing was I that scene was, I think, a much safer version. I wrote like a safer version. And then I think after a couple years and help from a lot of filmmakers basically being like, hey, don't pull any punches, like
right.
what really happened. And I was kind of like, all right, then let's really write what happened and not worry about making him likable or anything. And through that, I think you actually see him as an idiot kid, and that's a big turning point for him, that he's
right.
an idiot kid. He's actually not malicious, he's an idiot, you know.
Right.
And I think a lot of people see themselves. I had a few friends see it and go, hey, man, was that, like, based on the party at the Waldorf Astoria that was there? Like, is that based on? I just go, I don't know, man.
And Noah Baumbach helped you with the script. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I almost feel bad lumping him into my movie in case he doesn't like it. I don't know if he's seen it yet. I recently saw him at, like, the BAFTAs. I went to the thing in London, and I told him, like, man, you were, like, the reason that I made this movie, because I wrote the script and I was a little embarrassed by the fact that I'd written it or something. You just get a little embarrassed as an actor. You're But I left it outside his door, and he was really the first person to say, hey, it's really good, and there's, or even more than it's really good, it's got a lot of magic in there you got to mine.
Wow.
And he went through the script almost page by page, and I sat, and I remember watching the sun go down and nervously looking out the window as the sun went down. We were there for like 3 or 4 hours.
Wow.
And he would look, and it was cool. He would look at it, and he would try and piece it together and say, well, that doesn't, right? Because it taught me a lot. It was just awesome.
Yeah, it was just great. To back up so people don't think like you were stalking Noah and you just left him a script.
I was.
Explain.
He still lives in a building that my parents live in, and he's our neighbor randomly in New York.
Wow.
And so, it was kind of convenient.
It's very similar filmmaking. So how many more scripts have you written?
Well, I wrote another one, and so we're trying to make it now, which is the hardest part of the whole process, right. is getting it made, always.
Right.
Making the movie is so much easier. I mean, that's why I don't even really think about directing yourself or whatever. At that point, you're making the movie. Every day is candy. It's like,
making
the movie. Yeah, who cares if it's bad? We got here. So that was my attitude, but getting there is tough.
Yeah.
Jojo Rabbit was so good. Just want to put that out there. He's so awesome. That movie really, I was really moved by that movie.
It's pretty awesome. So let's talk about Human Capital, which is the next movie coming out. Give me the log line. What is it?
Well, it's three stories that all surround this one accident and seeing how these two different families respond to it and how this secret dangerous love story unfolds and how it plays into this accident. And I sort of feel like with this movie, it's the less you know, the better.
Yeah,
going
I didn't know anything. But I do want to talk about Maya Hawke.
The best.
You couldn't take your eyes off of her in this movie.
The best.
Did you know her before?
I went to preschool with her. I went to preschool with Maya.
So you remember her from preschool?
So yeah, so we, and it's crazy because we did all this press for this movie, did not bring it up in press once because we just forgot when we become friends as adults. But yeah, we went to preschool together and we dressed as, I think we dressed as Power Rangers together for one Halloween.
Oh, so you were like, you were,
we were friends.
You were preschool friends.
Yeah, totally, preschool friends. And we were always friends. And then I think through high school, whatever, we just got into separate circles, and then we totally came together for this movie when she got back into acting, and it was
that's hilarious.
Such an amazing experience. Hilarious, amazing.
So like, you woke up, like, were you like, I don't know, that's...
I showed up in the Power Ranger costume, I was like, why didn't you, Maya, you're not wearing the Power Ranger
here's
costume.
Here's my photo album, remember preschool?
I feel like Maya's going to deny that she dressed as a Power Ranger for Halloween,
and I
just want to go on record, she's lying.
Now we're going to take a short break, but when we return, Wolf opens up about his new friendship with Nicolas Cage and working with Hugh Jackman. Plus, is a Naked Brothers Band reboot in the works? Stick around. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's more of Alex Wolf.
Now let's talk about Castle in the Ground. More drugs.
So many. Yeah.
More drugs. More drugs, dude.
Bad. All the bad trauma.
Human capital, drinking. Cat Moon drinking drugs. Castle on the Ground drugs.
Human capital, I don't know about drinking. I don't know because there's no drinking. I think human capital, no drinking.
What?
Not for.
Oh,
you gotta see the movie. You gotta see the movie.
I see what you're saying.
But
human capital does show high schoolers getting trashed.
Yeah.
Okay. It's bad. Gotcha.
Traumatic.
Now Castle on the Ground.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's a tough one to watch, but it's a really more than a bleak just drug movie. It is more about a boy's journey to kind of self-discovery and finding out what to do with his loneliness. It's like more meditation on loneliness and isolation than anything else.
And what did he do? He just did drugs to self-medicate.
Yeah. I thought you were saying I did drugs.
No,
I was
no,
like,
no.
Ooh, no, I did not.
No, I'm talking about the character.
I think one of the big issues is loneliness and boredom. And I think it's really about a boy who loses his mom and he has all these drugs lying around the house and it's just the accessibility. It's just too easy and he doesn't have anything else to do. And even more than Medicaid, I think he wants to take the pain away, but I think he also just wants something to do. And I think it becomes a passion and something to care about and makes his life feel like it has value and matter, even though it's the exact antithesis of that. So I guess that's what drew me to it.
How'd you prepare?
Well, the thing that I had to do was I lost a ton of weight in a really short amount of time. I had a couple weeks to prepare. And
how much did you have to lose?
Well, he never gave me a guideline, but I basically got the job and then just stopped eating, which ended up causing a lot of problems, and I would not suggest it.
Right.
But I lost like 30 pounds in like a couple weeks, and
dude.
Yeah, and it was really tough. And
because there's no judgment, but you're a thin guy.
I know.
Like you lose
I know.
30 pounds. That's.
Well, I wanted to feel more than look it, because I didn't really care if you could see it or not. I really just wanted to feel how he feels. And I think he feels like he's hungry for something and whatever. But no, it ended up causing a ton of like health problems. It was a whole pain. But when I see the movie, I do look really gone and gaunt and a little bit emaciated and white and just super pale. Wow. And so I feel like it's worth it for that. But.
Is there a message in the movie? Because, I mean, we're seeing a lot of projects come out now about the opioid epidemic. So is there a message, or is it just here's the story?
Well, I think I have a bit of an allergy to movies that are too heavy-handed in the message, but I think what it does do is it shows how easy it is for a young, vulnerable person to fall into this world. It's in Sudbury, Canada, in 2012, which was like the worst year for the opioid crisis in Canada ever, because they had all these drugs on the market and got these people hooked, and then they just took it off the market, and it left all these people in shambles. And so people started then replacing what they had, the OxyContin, with fentanyl, and that just started killing people all over the place. And this is all about fentanyl and OxyContin. And, you know, people can die from a grain of sand of fentanyl, size of fentanyl, and people can die all the time, and it's what keeps happening. And I think they've said that that's what happened with Mac Miller and certain people. Yeah. It's just, it's a really, it's like the scariest drug that there is out there.
Did you meet with real addicts?
You know, Imogen Poots, who's in it, with Joey Klein, the director, went to go meet with all these addicts because she is an addict in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, she's like an actual addict and whatever. And I think Joey and I made the decision to protect me a little bit from that. So mm-hmm. I didn't know what addicts were, and I didn't know what it was like, and more was going to be a kid who's falling into. And so Imogen would guide me on what it would be like to have an addict there.
So she, I got it.
So she could be the addict, and I was kind of just following her lead. And so that was kind of a fascinating thing, not going and her going with the director, and me just being kind of oblivious and just falling into it.
Do you feel a responsibility when you make a movie like this?
Not at the time, and now when you talk about it, you do.
Mm-hmm.
More when it comes out. Makes you a little nervous, but...
What makes you why nervous?
Well, you want to get it right. You want to make sure you did the right thing.
Yep.
You didn't blow it. You you portrayed it in a sensitive way, and it doesn't feel like, I don't know, it doesn't feel like you're glamorizing it in any sort of way. You have to be careful not to glamorize it. But at the same time, in the moment, I really try not to think about responsibility in acting at all.
Okay, another Jumanji movie. When's it happening?
I want to ask the same question.
Your agent, your manager, who
Jumanji is like a magical little creature that just keeps crawling back and asking us to come, and I just feel like I don't want to disturb it. When the Jumanji creature is ready to come out, I will
wow, that is a way of deflecting a question.
I know that was a clever deflection. No, I genuinely don't know. From the bottom of my heart, I wish I knew.
Do you want to do another one?
Yes. I would do 10 more. I'm not kidding.
How much fun are they? Just like you go from like, you know, these, you obviously do some really small indie movies, and you go to these big sort of popcorn movies.
Yeah. Well, I was Jake Kasdan. It was funny because after Jumanji, I did a bunch of dark movies in a row. I did like Hereditary and all these things. And I remember one of the takes on the new Jumanji, he was like, "So you've been doing a lot of dark movies." He's basically telling me, like, let's lighten it up a little bit.
You're like, "I'm doing the dark movies because of Jumanji."
I was like, yeah. You did this for me. You made it dark. Can't turn back.
Pig. God, there's so many. You're what do you call it? Resume? What did IMDb list? It's just long. Pig.
Thanks, yeah,
you
I'm
and
really
Nicolas Cage.
It's the best. It was so fun. That was the best experience probably in my life. That
Why?
And making Cat in the Moon.
Why?
Well, Nick Cage, not only has he now become one of the best friends of my life and one of the most loyal people in my life I'm not even kidding. We talk almost every few days. We text just all day. And he FaceTimed me like 2 days ago. And we really support each other and help each other with things. And we started making the movie when we were both going through very similar personal things in our life. And we bonded over it immediately and connected. And we're very emotionally open with each other. And we just became best friends. So regardless of how the movie turns out or whatever people feel about it, that guy and I formed a lifelong friendship, and I'll figure out a time to announce it. But he's producing something that I'm making, and
that you're talking about?
I don't know. but making the movie was just also so. In addition to that, he is to me the best actor that we have out there. You know, he and De Niro and Pacino. I mean, they're the best that we have right now.
They're actors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And doing scenes with him was, I was saying this to my brother and my mom that, when you're acting, most of the time you're thinking like, well, this take I did this, and like, oh, did it, and with him, I forgot we would move on from the scene. I'm like, wait, did we do the scene? It was like, because he basically guides you like a angel.
Wow.
He just kind of guides you across the water. So it's just so, you forget what you did because you're so in the moment. You don't know what he's going to do next, and it's, I mean, he's the best. I mean, he's just the greatest.
Were you nervous when you first met him?
Yes. beyond, because the truth is he was my favorite actor before this. And wow. I remember I wished on my 14th, 15th birthday that my dream was to do a movie with Nick Cage. Everyone, all my friends have said you willed it into existence because I would talk. Nick Cage is my biggest inspiration.
Now, raising so when Arizona, do you leaving tell Las Vegas. Him that?
I told him on day one. I told him immediately. I said, I have to get this out of the way. And the coolest thing was in Toronto, we both got awards together. We got honored together before we made the movie, right before a couple weeks. And I showed up and we both won these awards. And I said to him, like, listen, you are like the reason I started acting, like wow. Raising Arizona and Adaptation and Leaving Las Vegas and Vampire's Kiss and National Treasure. Everything. I've seen them all. Right. Matchstick Men. I mean, he's the greatest. He's just the greatest. And I think this is one of his best performances. It's a beautiful, he just gave a beautiful, searing, honest, soulful, subtle performance.
And he's a guy who's sort of out, isolated from the world, lost his pig, a truffle yeah. pig thing.
He's a truffle. I know. It's a it's a wild, wacky movie, but it's actually really somber and really sweet and sad. But he's basically this a truffle farmer who gives me truffles. I'm a truffle salesman. I'm the only person who comes in contact with him because he's isolated in the woods, and he gives me truffles in exchange for supplies. And I give him supplies, and I give him all this stuff, and he gives me truffles. And his pig that gets him truffles gets stolen, and the only person that he knows is me. So he asked me to drive him to go find the pig. And it ends up being this midnight cowboy, like, odd Coen Brothers-y journey, a weird journey.
And what about the Naked Brothers reboot?
Well, Nat and I live the Naked Brothers reboot like every day. We're best friends with David Levy, who's on it, and whatever.
Right, but you have to film it to make it a reboot.
I want to do that.
Do you really want to do it?
Yes, of course. I want to do it.
I love that you say that, because you know how many, so many people like, sort of like they look at that part of their life and they're like, well, you know, I've outgrown that. I've moved on.
No, I have not outgrown it. I would love to do a reboot. Would love. It'd be so great.
Why isn't it happening?
I don't know. Everybody's busy. Everybody's. I don't know, man. I'm slowly writing down notes. I think we should all work in a convenience store. I think that one of us has to be really down and out, and the others have to lift us up, and then get the band back together. I mean, what do you think? What would you want the plot to be? A bunch of us, rolling.
Well, you know, one's an opioid.
We did talk about that. That Alex, who is a lemon lime soda addict, is probably a drug addict. That version.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be the Nickelodeon reboot.
You're right. No, definitely not a Nickelodeon. Netflix reboot. I like that.
And now just some fun questions. First 100%. Audition you ever went on?
First audition I ever went on. Well, I was lucky enough that I did the show and movie before I even knew what an audition was, because it was my friends and we were all on the show together. But then I think I auditioned for a Cameron Crowe movie. I think it was called We Bought a Zoo. I think it wasn't We Bought a Zoo when I auditioned for it. It was like a small part, and I think it was so bad. It was like, I was just so nervous, and I think I did it in a little tape, and I think it was the worst thing ever. And I should find it just to keep my ego in check.
Last time you cried at the movies?
I cry every time in the movies. It's very hard to not make me cry at the movies, genuinely. But I'm trying to think the last movie I cried. I mean, I sobbed in Jojo Rabbit. I mean, name the movies of this year, I probably cried in all of them. I mean, I cry when I see dogs on the street. I cry all the time.
So you're a crybaby.
I'm trying to think. I guess Jojo Rabbit is the last time I fully broke down in tears. I cried in The Souvenir because I loved it so much. Cried in Irishman twice.
Why did you cry in Irishman?
When he says, hey, you know, we're doing this thing where you could speak. Don't worry about it. You don't have to come. Or when De Niro's inviting him, I just started crying because it's just so sweet, that scene between.
Now, were you watching it at home or in a theater?
Theater. Sobbed in a theater. Yeah. Sobbed in a theater. And then also I cried when Joe Pesci gives him the ring and he kisses his, just all of it. Killed me. That movie killed me.
And what's the one movie you could watch over and over again and you'll never get bored?
Taxi Driver.
Why is that?
Because I think it's the best movie ever made. Just best performance. Performances, just, it's perfect. It's just a perfect movie. That movie, I could watch Cries and Whispers, Bergman movie. I could watch that over and over and over again. I've seen it probably 6 times. I think that one, because no matter what, that end still genuinely gives me stomach churning anxiety. And I think if a certain movie can emotionally hold on to you and through the years, that movie, Stand By Me, Eternal Sunshine, there's certain movies that there's certain movies that I love that aren't as rewatchable, but these are the ones that you can just turn on and it's just Dog Day Afternoon.
Bad Education, Roslyn, New York.
Yeah.
Long Island.
Exactly.
I probably went to summer camp with all those people, by the way.
you think you went to summer camp with the bad ones? The crazy ones?
Probably. I mean, I went, you know, Roslyn was like, and crazy. Hugh Jackman.
Is so good.
With his accent.
He is so good in this movie. If you don't see this movie for anything else, Hugh Jackman is mind-blowing. Like some of the, really one of the best lead performances I've ever seen by anybody.
And people weren't expecting it.
No, I've never seen him play a role like this. It's more like American Psycho than it is, you know, it's just.
And Variety had a really good take. The critic had a really good take saying like, it's the role that if Kevin Spacey didn't get in the trouble that he's gotten into, it would be a Kevin Spacey
role. I read their review. Yeah. And can I just say, Variety wrote me the nicest review for Cat in the Moon that I've ever seen, ever. Yeah. And I'll never forget that. And, you know, it's hard. You don't want to value reviews, but when one understands a movie the way that Variety understood Cat in the Moon, it's one of those ones that I sent to my whole family, and I never do that, but it really understood it, and it meant so much to me at a time when I was really vulnerable, and it was the first review that came out, and it was glowing, and it was big for me and big for us. So thank you, Variety, for being
You're
so awesome.
Welcome. Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much, man. It's so fun.
That was Alex Wolff. His new film, Human Capital, is in theaters on March 20th. That's it for this week's Big Ticket. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram @MarkMalkin. See you next time.